Good morning and welcome to the mandatory hearing on a proposed ballot initiative called the Division of California into Three States. The reason that we're here, and this is a joint hearing with the Assembly Committee on Judiciary and the Senate Committee on Governmental Organization. Happy to welcome my colleague, Senator Bill Dodd, who's the chair of the Senate Committee, to us, to this hearing here today. Now, it's California law that every ballot measure, once it gets at least 25% of the votes and prior to 131 days, I believe it is, from the election, which in this case means June 28th, that the legislature holds a hearing on a ballot measure that is to be put on the ballot by signature. This ballot measure, it qualifies at least for that. It has evidently garnered at least 25% of the required signatures, so we need to hold this hearing here soon. And today was the day that we scheduled the hearing. Now, I'm disappointed to report that the proponent, though invited, declined to come. And it's too bad that I'm not quite sure why they proposed a ballot measure, spent all that money to collect signatures, and refused to be here to even be able to talk about it, since this is an opportunity to have a public hearing about a ballot measure. And given the economic and the legal and the social consequences of breaking the state into three separate states, to not have a proponent here is a little frustrating and in my view, a little bit surprising. But nevertheless, we are obligated to move forward. We are going to hold the hearing. We have given everybody ample opportunity to come and join us, and hopefully we'll be able to vet this in our appropriate ways and then be able to move forward. Senator, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Yeah, briefly, I'd first like to thank the Chairman Stone and thank to you and your staff for putting this on. It's a pretty busy time, so I'll keep it brief. I, too, am disappointed that the proponents of the initiative cannot be here to discuss what they feel are important benefits to breaking up this state into three separate states. However, I'm hopeful that the LAO will be able to provide our committees with insight on how this process would work and the many challenges that this initiative presents. Let me thank in advance the witnesses for being here, and if the LAO could come forward now so that we could begin this hearing.
Okay. Let's invite up the whole panel. We have Ann Hollingshead, Senior Fiscal and Policy Analyst from the Legislative Analyst's Office. Tim Draper was invited, who's the initiative proponent, and Lauren Kay from the California Foundation for Committee and Education, an initiative opponent. And once we have the speakers, then you're welcome to sit there, but I would just move that. Yeah. We will then have public comment, closing comments, and move on with our day. All right. Please, from the LAO.
Thank you, Chair and members. Ann Hollingshead from the Legislative Analyst's Office. So let me just begin with a little bit of context around our office's role in the initiative process and then also in this hearing specifically. So Proposition 9 in 1974 gave our office the responsibility to conduct impartial analysis of all statewide initiatives. And as such, we do not take a position or offer any recommendations on proposition analyses that may be a bit different in this hearing's context versus our role in the budget process, where we do offer analysis and commentary. In addition, I just wanted to note that this initiative involves a number of legal and constitutional questions. These are, you know, particularly complex in this context. We are not lawyers, although we did consult with lawyers as we put together our analysis. So it may be difficult for us to, you know, address some of the more thorny, complex legal issues that are posed by this initiative. So, this initiative proposes splitting California into three separate states. Before I talk about the proposal specifically, let me just briefly address some legal background here. So first on the initiative process, California gives the voters the power to exercise some, but not all, of the legislature's initiative powers through the initiative process. For example, voters can create and change laws through the initiative process, but they cannot exercise other legislative powers. For example, courts have found that the voters are not allowed to exercise the legislature's power to advise the United States Congress through the initiative process. Second, on the U.S. constitutional question, so Article 4 of the United States Constitution provides the process by which a new state can be admitted to the Union, either by splitting from an existing state or a wholly new state in general. And historically, four states have been admitted to the Union after being split from existing states. In each of these cases, under the requirements of Article 4, both congressional approval is required and then the approval of the state legislature or legislatures involved is required. In each of the four historical examples, a legislative body was the entity that provided that approval, and there is no clear historical precedent or court ruling that says that the voters can provide that approval that's necessary under Article 4. So this initiative proposes to split California into three states. These new states would be Northern California, which would span from the Oregon border down to Santa Cruz. Then there would be California, which would be most of the coastal states, all of the coastal states from Monterey to Los Angeles counties. And then Southern California, which would stretch from Orange and San Diego County through much of the rest of the Central Valley. The measure also aims to provide the required state legislative consent under Article 4 of the United States Constitution. So clearly there are several legal issues that are raised by this measure. First, on the United States constitutional side, whether this is an allowable use of or an allowable approval process under Article 4 of the United States Constitution, and then also under the California constitutional perspective, the question would be whether this is an allowable use of the voters' initiative power. Those are both issues that courts themselves would have to resolve. So even if the measure is approved by voters and then approved by courts, we find that it does not have any direct fiscal effects, and that's because it would also require congressional approval in order to take effect. Congress could decide not to approve the request, could approve the request as proposed, or Congress could approve a different split of the state, say, into two different pieces. In that case, it would return to California for approval by the legislature. So finally, if the split did occur, so if voters approved it, it was allowed by the courts, and then Congress approved it as proposed, then there would be significant policy and legal questions that the legislature would have to address. Both the existing state legislature and then the legislatures of the new states would have to make decisions around how to divide California's assets and liabilities, how to divide its existing pension debt, its debt to external bondholders, as well as many other complex issues that would need to be resolved. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. And I'd also point out the background paper, I think, goes through a pretty exhaustive list of some of the other implications that would have to be sorted out. Mr. Kay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, consultants and staff, thank you for inviting me. As you noted, I'm Lauren Kay. I'm president of the California Foundation for Commerce and Education. We're a think tank affiliated with California Chamber of Commerce. Our board, the Cal Chamber Board, last month voted to oppose the three states measure for three reasons. It's disingenuous, it's distracting, and if it's implemented, it's dangerous. So for all our successes in California and for the wonder that we're held globally, we obviously have many problems. And nobody knows this better than you. You hear about it from your constituents, from your colleagues, and from us in among the organized interests. But for anybody who's been here for more than a week and a half, you realize that if you're sincerely committed to fixing any of these problems, you fix the problem. Division into three states doesn't fix any problems. It makes all of our problems objectively worse in the hope that someone who's more enlightened and more practical than the author will eventually come around and really finally fix them. So I want to give you a partial list of the ills that the proponent has identified on his website that beset California. California ranks last in the country in high school graduation rates and near the bottom in high priority subjects like math. California's highways, bridges, freeways, and city roads are ranked among the poorest in the nation. Californians pay the highest taxes in the nation, and yet our tax dollars are mismanaged in every way. The current overcrowding, underfunded prison system is failing. California's diverse regions require government attention that is specifically tailored to address the area's needs. So from his website. Well, you can quibble as to degree, but yes, these are all problems that you're working on every day, that we talk about, that there's a big conversation that goes on in California about these problems. We need to address them to make California a better state. As for this initiative, though, it does nothing to advance a solution to any of these problems. It doesn't add a new teacher. It doesn't reform any school regulations. It doesn't add any money to the roads. It doesn't take a single car off of the highways. It doesn't add any prison beds, modify any sentences, raise or reduce any taxes. Our central challenge is to reconcile the pluralistic demands of diverse interests in a dynamic nation state and advance the overall welfare of our citizenry. This initiative declares that surrender to this test is a better option than rising to that challenge. It's disingenuous to suggest to voters that the measure is a solution to a variety of ills when it accomplishes no more than drawing two more lines on the map of the United States. So rather than seeking to solve the real problems before us, the measure instead creates an entirely new suite of problems to distract and consume voters, political leaders like yourselves, concerned citizens, and ordinary residents. Now, Californians, sadly, don't always exhibit a robust bandwidth for considering state issues. What was the turnout at yesterday's primary election? I mean, was it even 40%? I'm not sure. Hopefully, it'll be more in November. But truly, the last thing we need on the ballot, we get involved in a lot of ballot, statewide ballot measures, as you probably know. The last thing we need on this ballot is a measure that's infamous solely for its audacity. Our limited capacity to discuss important and consequential issues like housing and poverty and homelessness, taxes, infrastructure, will be crowded out by a pointless speculation and debate over an unlikely event that nobody in any responsible position has ever suggested. Even if you agree that Californians must make fundamental changes to our governance, such as such an existential change should not be the subject of a simplistic ballot measure. As a representative from the legislative analyst said, this is ballot measures are not necessarily the correct or approved method for every matter. Yes, the people stand in the shoes of the legislature when they vote on initiatives, but they cannot revise the Constitution. They cannot make wholesale changes that even by a ballot initiative that's a constitutional amendment. That's why we have a constitutional revision process in the Constitution. Now, of course, we've never done this before, so who knows? But this is something that is more appropriate if you were so deluded as to think it was something that should be explored, that the legislature itself should do, or you should have a constitutional revision commission to consider. So finally, and somewhat reluctantly, I'll spend a few minutes dwelling on the practical implications of breaking California into pieces. The challenges are daunting, to say the least, from redistribution of state assets, assignment of state responsibilities, not to mention addressing the inherent inequities that will arise from an arbitrary geographical division of economic, financial, physical, and cultural patrimonies. And like you, I'd like to commend the staff report or staff reports that were done for the committee and to make sure that the legislature is apprised of them. They're thorough. But from our perspective, just a sampling of what you would face should this initiative pass, and should the Congress agree to set in motion a division into three Californians. First of all, with respect to the statement that there's no direct cost to the state of California, true, there's no substantial direct cost to sending a letter to Congress, which is really what this measure does. But it's disingenuous, and really a disservice to the voters to not lay out at least what the initial cost would be if this was to be adopted. And I'll just sit here and request that when you do publish your final fiscal analysis that you do consider some of these, because the voters do read the ballot pamphlet. That's one of the places where they do get information. But if the Congress were to approve such a process, well, first, the original state of California would be obligated to spend tens of millions of dollars on establishment of three conventions in each of the new proto-states to devise a constitution and a set of laws. This would require delegate selection, process, meeting staff, legal support, and outreach. Of course, the state would, as you suggested, the state would have to defend against vigorous litigation on the validity of the measure and on many aspects of the process that comes out of it. Second, each of the three new states would become startup ventures, requiring election of new statewide and legislative officials, appointment of new executive branch officers, and recruitment and hiring of staff, appointment of new judges, negotiation and development of new contracts with local governments, federal government, private vendors and grantees, adoption of new codes, government code, civil code, tax code, criminal code, all of that. Maybe new census. Don't know about that. And then the fun begins. That's just all the basic minimum to get the structure in place. Again, I'd point to the staff report, which goes into great detail on this. But from our perspective, some of the key questions about dividing the assets and liabilities of old California would include the University of California, California State University campus tuition policies for the incumbent students. One of my colleagues estimated that the cost to the students for as a result of out-of-state tuition could be in the order of $2 billion. Responsibilities for prisoners domiciled in one state who were committed from another. Responsibility for payment of water, power, and other infrastructure assets located in one state that serve the residents of another state. Of course, most notoriously, the responsibility of the water delivery systems. Most of the new California, that's the LA-based state, and much of Southern California's water supplies would be located in a different state and may have to traverse even a second state to reach their ultimate destination. Each new legislature or constitutional convention would have to decide what of our political legacy to adopt or reject. What about Prop 13, happy 40th birthday, or Prop 98? Will there be reapportionment commissions, death penalty? Would any of the hard-fought political battles that have occurred over the decades in ballot measures, whether reflecting prevailing victory of the left or the right, would they survive into these new regimes? And then finally, with regard to this intriguing and bizarre statement that if the state legislature fails to reach resolution of division and transformation of California within 12 months, then debts are distributed among newly created states based on population proportionately. So just to deconstruct this, if, say, half of the GO bonds, the GO bond debt for schools, for all your GO bonds, is in the new California, the new LA-based state, would the other two states with each would have 25% of the schools be required to pay a third of the debt? And likewise, say for pension obligations, the new California has 20% of the UC campuses and 20% of the UC medical centers, but would residents of the new California have to pay a third of the pension debt? I don't know. Well, as you can see, this exercise moves quickly from a serious policy analysis to a parlor game. And with that, I've probably spent more than I should to dignify this measure with a discussion of it. But there you go, and I'm happy to respond to any questions. Thank you.
Questions?
Very complete.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to then open up for public comment if anyone would like to address this hearing. All right. Seeing none, bring it back for final comments, Senator.
Yeah, I appreciate both of you being here. I think you articulated your positions very, very well, and time will tell.
Thank you. Yeah. I just was pointed out to me that currently voter turnout in our yesterday's election stands at 21.8%. Of course, there are absentee ballots and others to be counted, so over the next month that will hopefully go up substantially, but it only has so far to go. Pretty poor turnout, to your point. Exactly. And I will just have to say that the 120 legislators who are here, and yes, we fight for our districts and we fight for our constituents, but we also have a much broader sense of what's good for the entire state. And we all recognize that responsibility and that authority that we have. And so to think about breaking that up and breaking it down with a tremendous amount of cost, a tremendous amount of uncertainty, is something that I don't think this legislature, this is not a question I don't think will come up in this legislature for those reasons and for the reasons that were articulated. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if this gets on the ballot and what the people of California really would have to say about it. But ultimately, it's not our question. It is something that would have to be responded to federally. And fortunately or unfortunately, they seem to be incapable of doing much at that level. So depending on what we send to them, who knows? And we are, you know, we are governing. And, you know, you point out the divides in some of the political questions that we have and the fights that we have. And even though we have strong Democratic majorities, we are governing. And we are governing in a bipartisan way, primarily, in both houses, and have a variety of perspectives at the table as we do policy. And how could anyone want to break the progress that we've made, break it up, and move to something else? So anyway, that is his priority. With that, I appreciate, Senator, you being here. Appreciate everybody being here. Appreciate the panel come forward and lay this out a little bit, and the great work that was done to lay out what the potential implications are. We will see what happens, and we are adjourned.